Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps, the OG 90 Day Fiancé podcast, and place where I, Jody, your best friend and inner voice, break down all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, Lifetime to Bravo, even WeTV and Netflix, let's break down all the cringeworthy moments together. Be sure to check out bonus episodes, extra content, ad-free episodes, and exclusive perks at patreon.com/realitypod and chat with me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at realitypod. And now, let's dive right in. Hello, happy holidays. I hope today's episode finds you basking in the holiday spirit of whatever it is that you do or do not celebrate. I have a little announcement to make, actually two announcements to make. The first being that over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be spending a lot of time with my kids and my family because I am officially announcing that we will be adding to our little humble home. We are going to be adopting a little tiny golden doodle puppy. We met her yesterday and we get to take her home in 2 weeks. She is fluffy and cute and cuddly and playful. She even peed and pooed and I didn't gag or dry heave. So I am pretty damn sure this is what puppy love is. Her name is Scout Bader Ginsburg. I am sure you are going to get to know her through rumblings in the background because I'm going to be the one training her. I certainly do not want my little Ms. Bader Ginsburg becoming a teen mom dog. Those are the dogs that make an appearance once and then they quickly get shipped off to God only knows where because, you know, one of the kids tries to hurt the dog or the dog is eating Cheetos off the floor. Farrah Abraham's daughter has been known to perhaps kill one, allegedly. You know what I'm saying. So I'm going to be recording episodes, training this little puppy. So bear with me, and hopefully you're welcoming Scout to the world with me. Now, the second announcement I need to make is that I will not be releasing an episode next week that will be, oh gosh, what is it? Like the second, third, something like that. I will be watching the 90 Day Fiancé Tell All and adding that to the lineup of the following week. So please don't forget about me. Please make sure that you are subscribed. And if you could, here's my Christmas wish. Pretty please with all of the donuts and wine and whatever your favorite food is on top, please leave a little 5-star, even if it's not a written review, just clicking the little 5 stars in your podcast player, which is probably iTunes, Apple Podcasts, that really, really helps me out, and I would greatly appreciate it. Now, let's dive into Love After a Lockup first today, because I really continue to fall deeper in love with this show every week. I don't know if it's because this 90 Day Fiancé cast, they're really scaring the shit out of me in real time on social media. I'm really, really afraid that they're going to ruin a good thing. All of these antics off air that they are doing, it's got to be driving production crazy, the network crazy, and so help me if they end up shutting down the 90 Day Fiancé project because someone takes it too far. I don't even know. I know you're all with me on this. I don't know what we're going to do. So 90 Day Fiancé people, you have been warned. Okay, let's get into Love After Lockup, starting with Caitlin and Matt. So Caitlin is on her mission to do this exchange with prison officials in order to get her hands on Matt. It was very teen mom, shared custody, pickup, drop off at the gas station. I mean, does that not just warm your heart? Reminds me of the good old days. I still don't fully understand the outfit choice, but, you know, maybe there's no Target around in the Roy or prison surrounding areas. I'll give her a break, but for such a cute little figure, I think Caitlin can work on finding some reasonably priced transition pieces. Now, finally, this old souped up baby blue Chevy Suburban or something rolls up and Caitlin is all kinds of confused whether it's Matt's transport or not. Okay, well, Caitlin, it's either a prison transport because of the bars and reinforced steel on the windows, or it's the person who I have been looking for who kidnapped this girl on, I think it was either season 2 or 3 of Unsolved Mysteries. If you watch the series, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So survey says it is prison Mike. The door swings open and Caitlin starts convulsing, screaming, oh my God, races towards Matt. And you could tell he was so overwhelmed because he was trying to tell her to settle down. The guy who was just locked up is telling someone else who's been in the free world for her whole life to settle down. Now, at first I thought, you know, Matt seems like a good guy. He's keeping his cool. He's like, all right, chill out, girl. Okay, everything's all good. But then I changed my mind because as soon as I saw that little doorway in his teeth on the bottom row, and then he's lighting up cigarettes, I think he just like rested it in the gap. Then the making out and the zooming in on where Matt's fingers were or were not. You know what I'm talking about. I get really Catholic-y when I start talking about this stuff. It was very uncomfortable. I don't get why they had to do that on the side of the road. If they would have just, let's just talk about logistics here. If they would have taken that same time that they were making out on the side of the road to get in the car and go to wherever it is that they need to go to do the thing that they need to do, they would have gotten there sooner and been able to get there sooner, if you know what I'm saying. That was a little throwback to my Garrett from last season. Now let's talk about, oh God, Megan, Michael, and Sarah. I love Megan. I absolutely love this girl. So it's one more day until Michael's release day, and Megan has wrangled her brother Marcus into driving her to the airport. I immediately love Marcus. I mean, just look at the guy's face. He's adorable. He's Megan's little brother, but I thought it was really sweet that even though it's his big sister, he was protective of her. He's looking after her. He even pulled her suitcase for her. So freaking cute. Meanwhile, we have Sarah. This is the baby mama that they're referring to. She is also packing and on her way to pick up Michael. Oh my God, what is going to happen? Now, if you're just jumping into Love After Lockup, congratulations, welcome to the dark side. You gotta know, Megan and Sarah don't know about each other. I mean, Megan knows Michael has a baby mama, but he doesn't know that they're together. Both of them are living in this la-la land that Michael is so trustworthy, they have no doubts about their future together with him. Sarah cannot say enough how she feels so lucky to have Michael. He's the perfect father and partner. They're going to be the perfect family, the perfect couple. So functional. I mean, the most functional family unit ever. Now, then we see Megan checking in at the airport. My heart is already dropping just thinking about this. Michael is calling her. She's actually at the kiosk checking in. This is no joke. Suddenly, Michael says he doesn't want Megan to come pick him up. He's got all these things he has to do, lots of errands, lots of things to check off the list before he wants to see her. So in other words, don't call me, I'll be calling you, but 100 years, my poor, poor sweet Megan, she's so cute, way too sweet to deserve this. And I'll tell you what she was probably thinking, which is what I'm thinking. She knows that she has just graduated from writhing lessons on national TV, and now Michael's gonna do her like this. I mean, what a heartless asshole. Who should we talk about next? Lizzie and Scott have gotta go last because they are just the creme de la creme. What about Tracy and Clint? Oh, Clint. Lovely name, Clint. Was he just born 47 and kept on aging at a rapid pace? Possibly with a nervous disorder that makes him pick at his face. It's crazy. I know I read some articles, I think with Starcasm, you know, they're my go-to. He's got some background, he's got some issues, but even beyond that, okay, beyond arrests, addictions, his face alone, go with me on a journey here, you know how this brain of mine works. He has the face of an Avery. Like, you might just be a relative. I'm talking about Making a Murder Avery's. Do you see it now? There's some sort of a relation. I know they live in New Mexico, but I bet you if I went on Ancestry, there are some Wisconsin ties. Now, Clint is still head over handcuffs for Tracy. He calls her up and he just tells her, "I'm in a car with my mom." Good job, Clint. I have this feeling that this was probably something that Clint wrote in kindergarten, like his first sentence. I'm in a car with my mom, you know, where you draw a little picture and write down what you drew a picture of. He probably got a gold star on it, and now he just overuses that phrase because it's just not a sentence that a grown man says. I'm in a car with my mom. Probably still gets a pat on the back from his mommy and pops, though. The weirdness continues in this car scene because not only is Clint barely able to string together a sentence, Tracy and Mother Clint seem to do much more talking than Tracy and Clint himself. Tracy seems to be the more talkative of the two because she just keeps going on and on and on about these cover girl items that she's got to get her hands on. She's all about the makeup. She also is very insistent on these wedding vows. I really want to know what they are because Clint seemed very uncomfortable with them. Like a Michael Scott level, I hate to even compare the two because I adore Michael Scott, but he just had this naive, I feel like there should be a safe word in our vows kind of thing. He did not want to repeat them at all. So I wonder what the hell was in them. Finally, Clint realizes when he finally does start speaking that Tracy just hung up on him. I mean, maybe they ran out of time because that's how prison phone calls are. But I think Tracy probably just didn't want to hear Clint mouth breathing and umming anymore. So she just, oops, sorry, time's up. Okay, well, it was time's up for them. Let's go to Brittany and Marcelino. Wow, you guys, I don't know if I'm the only one finding Marcelino super creepy. Brittany is supposed to be the felon here, but Marcelino is the one giving me really weird vibes. Well, today is release day for Brittany, so Marcelino is on his way to the Vegas prison to pick her up, and he says he knows there's obstacles that she needs to overcome. You see, Brittany has a young child that lives with her ex. Yeah, Marcelino uses Brittany's motherhood as an obstacle to overcome. It was the very first obstacle that he mentioned. Don't know if I was the only one that picked up on that, but I was like, ooh, that's not really the right category to put a child in. Now, that pesky kid obstacle is then followed by her having relationships with women behind bars. Oh, not only that, a narcotic addiction. Oh, and, you know, those burglary and conspiracy charges. Now, that is of no concern to our resident Deepak Chopra over here, because he says he can, and this is a direct quote, erase the tumultuous past that she's had. Cool imaginary eraser. Maybe you can lend it to me so I can erase the tumultuous mortgage payments that I have or erase that student loan that I foolishly paid off. This guy, he's the type of person that just says a lot of words with a lot of syllables in them and he thinks that it sounds really smart or really deep. Okay, so he is doing some daily meditations next to his Nissan Cube in order to center his chakras and gather himself before Brittany arrives. And oh, there she is. Suddenly, Brittany appears in what I think is a prison nurse's outfit? Question mark. It's like one part old school Shawshank Redemption style denim prison shirt. And on the bottoms, it was just classic turquoise nurse doctor scrubs. Interesting look, but Marcelino loves it. He lets her jump into his arms at a very high angle. Like she's so high up above his waist. It was pure luck that he's got the core strength. Maybe that was a result of him being a Marine, but he's got the core strength to maintain that hold. At one point, you can see like she went down to kiss him, but she was so high above, like boob height, holding her ass up there that she's trying to bend down and reach his mouth. It was super awkward, but Marcelino, despite his chakras being aligned, his brain cells aren't because he wasn't figuring out that maybe he should put her down and they should just, you know, kiss like normal people. Now, let's talk about Brittany. Right off the bat, I have concerns about her, of course, because she's got a little bit of a checkered past or a lot of a checkered past, but also because of her teeth and the FLDS length hair. Now, hear me out. I don't want to diss anyone for having dental issues. Sometimes it's just a genetic thing. I get it. However, I'm pretty confident that Brittany just never brushed her teeth while in custody. The things are the shade of like a lemonade or orange juice, and inexplicably, there are gaps and black holes of gingivitis, and there is no excuse for that. Like I said, hear me out. If you are incarcerated, you have time. You have nothing but time behind bars. Out of anyone on this planet, you have more than the standard minimal 2 minutes to dedicate to twice or even, I'm going to go thrice a day brushing. I gave this some thought, as, you know, I always do. And here's really a recommendation. If you are in the dental field, if you know a dentist, I think DDSs should really ask prisoners for client testimonials to prove what a difference spending extra time on your teeth a day really does for your dental health. Think about it. You would have willing participants say, hey, you guys and gals in the clink, you have plenty of time every day. Would you be my test subjects? You brush your teeth 4 times a day and let's compare it to the general public. See what I'm saying? Okay, let's get back to the cube. Oh, wait, it's not a Nissan cube. It's a Kia. I think it was a Kia Soul. I think Nissan must not be able to do the street stunts that Marcelino likes to do, so he went with the Kia. Because, you know, he likes donuts. Or not doing donuts. I'm talking about the car kind. But you know what he can do in that Kia? He can roll down his window and stick his middle finger out. Watch out. Fast and the Furious. This guy's such a dork. Okay, we finally hear a little bit from Brittany. Certainly has some demons in her past, and that's for sure. So when she went off into the desert, I really started to like her. I felt for her. I think that was a really good decision on her part. It was good for her just to have that moment of being alone. And when Marcelino came over and he started going, baby, over her shoulder, I wanted to freaking smack him upside the transition lenses that he had on, because Brittany specifically asked to be alone. Can you just give her some space for like 20 minutes? She's been locked up for 2 years. Back the fuck off. Marcelino is just too much too soon for me. Okay, let's get to Lizzie and Scott. Oh my God. Santa knows we have all been good this year, because these two together on screen are fucking magic. I never would have thought last year when he was trimming his bushes. I didn't forget about that in Oxnard, California, when he freaking hacked the shit out of his shrubs. I never would have thought that he would be able to bring the TV that he's bringing. Okay, so remember, Lizzie has been released. She has got this wet wavy curl thing going on, an ice cream drumstick shoved down her gullet, also known as Jody, when there's a rare moment alone, and who I like to call my inner Monique. She tells me that I am fat and I'm fabulous and I deserve it and just live my life. Lizzie's got an inner Monique too. Let's back up just a moment here. Pre-drumstick, if you will. She's in the car with Scott, Jasmine, and Scott's son. She jumps out of Scott's car while it is still moving and runs into the gas station like Melissa Gilbert in Little House on the Prairie in the beginning segment. You know what I'm talking about? Except she's in wedges and not enough humility and not enough breast support. I'm just saying, if I were her, I would have stopped at the nearest, I don't even care. It could have been a Dress Barn. It could have been a Walmart. It could have been anywhere, even a Home Depot. I would have picked up some duct tape just to tape the girls down, get some bosom support. But she clearly doesn't give a shit. She is raiding the shelves in this gas station like it is fucking supermarket sweep. And she's got 10 more seconds, you know, chucking the hams in the cart. A few Slim Jims, which I thoroughly enjoy. Love a good Slim Jim. She's got some gross varieties of Hershey's in there. Disgusting. Don't be giving no pretzels and mint cream and all that kind of crap. But Scott's falling behind her with his styrofoam cooler, not saying a damn word. Right there and then, he should have said something, because they are in public. Lizzie is the type of narcissist that does not want to be embarrassed. She doesn't want to be called out on stuff. So if he's going to say anything to her, I would suggest a public place, also because she's scary as shit. So she's, you know, double fisting her drumstick. She's buying lotto tickets, an overgrown Veruca Salt. It was disgusting. And I got to tell you, you know, Scott, I want to say, oh, poor Scott, I feel bad for him. But poor Scott, that's just too on the nose, right? Well, after spending $250 at the gas station, they arrive at the hotel. Now, Jasmine and Lizzie are staying in one room, and Scott and Adam are staying in another room. This begs the question, which kid had it worse? I know, tough question. Lizzie is pretending she's 8 years old. She's jumping on the bed. She's doing the running man whenever she has to take a step anywhere. And then she's yelling at Scott when he puts his shoes on the bed. Now you're probably saying, Jody, that is totally you. Yes, putting your shoes on the bed is disgusting, but so is jumping on the bed with your bare feet that you just walked all over your prison cell earlier. So let's just take several seats, Lizzie. Cut away to Jasmine saying that she wishes Scott would just disappear and thinks he's weird because, you know, he kind of is. Lizzie likes him enough, though, to use him for drumsticks and drinks, but hell no, she doesn't want to sleep with him or be near him anyway. You know why, though? She's a born-again virgin. Sure, she's had a handful of sexual relationships behind bars with other women, and somehow they got sunglasses and gold chains and cameras to take a yearly Christmas card photo, but you know what? Her legs now are closed for Scott and only Scott. Speaking of Scott, where is he? Oh, pobrecito. He's in the courtyard of the hotel in tears. He just wants to be loved, and he's feeling like Lizzie is just ignoring him. And on top of all of that, he still needs a new bridge. Now, Jasmine does not seem to be having much better of a time because frickin' Lizzie is in the hotel room acting like she's a 15-year-old girl who just got her first set of boobs or something. I mean, she's putting on this bikini, asking Jasmine how she looks, and oh, looks good, right? Looks good. Such a narcissist. Of course she's going to be ignoring everyone's feelings, Scott's, Jasmine's, because she has no ability to empathize. You know what she can do, though? She can float, like a serial killer in a horror movie. Luckily, it didn't last long because Lizzie suddenly realizes, oh, where's my meal ticket? Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, Scott. Well, he's outside. So she runs outside in her bikini. Not for nothing. She's got confidence. Runs up behind him and chokes him. Oh, sorry. I jumped ahead to the future homicide there. She hugs him from behind. And with no idea why Scott would be so upset with her or worried about her intentions, Lizzie turns the whole scenario around. I'm doing the Kelly Dodd, she's the puppet, and we're all the master's move right here. Lizzie turns the whole scenario around on Scott like a classic manipulator, classic pathological liar, and just starts gaslighting him. I am sure she said a lot of things in this scene that I should have picked up on, but I have to tell you, I was staring at her boobs, just like every single one of you. I know you were too. Everyone on this planet was staring at Lizzie's boobs. Put the things away. The bikini top is the real MVP in this episode. Deserves a fucking medal for the work that that thing is putting in, keeping those girls up. Bravo. Okay, well, stick around after the break. Let's get into some 90 Day Fiancé. It really is the most wonderful time of the year. Also, the time I realize I need clothes with a little extra stretch to them. Now, the budget is tight in the Huff household right now with the holidays and home improvement, but I'm not even worried about getting myself some new stretchy jeans because I shop on Poshmark. Yes, I'm not only a podcaster, I'm also a client. Now, I went on the free Poshmark app the other day, searched for the brands of jeans I love, cut from the cloths, and believe it or not, I really like American Eagle jeans too. The great thing about Poshmark is that you're shopping from millions of closets from across America, so you can find exactly what you want. I found a pair of jeans I loved, new with tags, but instead of just purchasing the price listed, I offered the seller $40, and guess what? She accepted. It's that easy. $90 jeans for $40, and shipping is so easy on both ends that I received them by the end of the week. It's actually so easy, I forgot that I had a really nice watch I received as a gift. I've never opened it, so guess what I will be selling soon. You know, don't tell Dave. I'm just going to keep the proceeds, keep shopping, and next time it looks like some new running shoes will make their way to my cart. Listeners of RealiTV get $5 off your first purchase by entering referral code RealiTV. Maybe you want to find something cute for the holidays, New Year's Eve, or maybe even some cozy pajamas. Come on, you know you're tempted. Just do it. Go to Poshmark.com or the Poshmark app and remember to use referral code RealiTV, R-E-A-L-I-T-V. Poshmark.com, the easiest way to buy and sell fashion. It is truth-telling time. In actuality, it is Sunday evening, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. I've had two glasses of wine, and by the sound of my voice, I'm guessing you can already tell. I just spent the last hour out of the last 2 hours screaming at the TV at Eric and Lita. You guys, this is beyond any level of, oh, they're crazy on TV. This 90 Day Fiance, I mean, for real, they are actual sociopaths. We use that word a lot, but really, they are, that might even be a compliment. They are just horrible, terrible people. Now, we'll get to them, but let's get through most of the couples first. Let's start with Ashley and Jay. They're getting married. They're in Vegas. Jay's gone with an interesting choice. A red suit, or maybe a dark red maroon suit, and a sparkly tie. Interesting. Ashley has gone with a somewhat traditional sparkly gown. She's still doing the whole hair and makeup thing, although you can tell she's not feeling it. She looks like she's down in the dumps. She's saying that it's just because her friends and family aren't there, but it seems like there might be something more. And a little bit later in the limo, you pick up on the body language. Something is not right. However, Jay is seemingly excited. He's joking around about being tied down to one woman, but for the most part, it seems like he's excited to get married. I am sure Elvis singing Amazing Grace will make it all better, or it'll make you laugh because I don't think he sounded nor looked like anything even close to Elvis. You know, I don't think any woman wants to see, or man for that matter, wants to see their husband's chest hair as they're saying, I do. So they certainly do not want to see some rando impersonator's chest hair just spilling out of his too tight shirt. Just doesn't go with the whole theme of pledging your life to your beloved. Now, that is the one side of my brain, but I am a Gemini, so the other side of my brain is saying, wow, that's kind of fun and romantic. I can see why couples do it. Now let's talk about this limo ride. It was very suspicious to me because Ashley's face looked more down and depressed and solemn than when she was reading the comments on her wedding website. So something for sure was up even at that time. The look on her face, the lack of eye contact between the two, very telling. Now, the next time we see Ashley is days later when she's at home. She's got her nice glass of white wine, much like myself about an hour ago. And the producers are asking her why Jay is not there and what happened. Without rehashing every detail, Jay made a Tinder account the day that they got home from Vegas. I mean, what a freaking asshole. And he started contacting other women because I hear that that is what you do on Tinder. So Ashley confronted him, that a girl. He ultimately admitted it, and then he punched a freaking hole in her wall. I'm so proud of Ashley that she confronted him and she stuck to her guns, but I was so disappointed that she ended up going over to Scooty Natty Doos. It's just not a good move. What good is going to come out of that? Natalie is going to be the type of person that's just going to say, oh, I told you so, and make you feel worse about the situation. So now Ashley's got Natalie in her ear saying, I told you so, Jay's a horrible person, you shouldn't have ever married him, and she's got Jay in her house refusing to leave. Girl, you just gotta call Molly, get the lawyer's number, the one that looks like he wants to be a Beatle, and do what you need to do. Next up, we have Colt and Larissa. They have a little more than a week to go, and Colt, he's already stepping on my damn toes with his toe walking, stepping on my toes. Olive green is my color. And not only is Colt wearing a heather olive green V-neck t-shirt that I myself own, but he is just flaunting his boobs now. He's taken my color and he now has the confidence that I think any grown woman wishes they had. He's also slacking in the trash and recycle duties. This really rubbed me the wrong way, because he is making Larissa do the chores with him. Now, I'm not saying, oh, a woman shouldn't take out the trash. I don't mind taking it out. I empty the trash, sort the recycling almost every freaking day of my life. But come on. Colt can manage to pick up 2 bags by himself. He doesn't need to be side-eyeing Larissa like she's slacking on Debbie's chore chart. You can manage tiptoeing around the corner and pushing the carts on your own. Before moving forward, I want to be clear, although I absolutely despise Larissa, I do not feel badly for Colt. All of his recent social media mess aside, did he cheat on her? Was he talking to other girls? I don't really care. All of that aside, Colt loves stirring the pot between his mom, Debbie, and Larissa. He is the one making it happen. He tells Larissa, don't let my mom bother you. Let her do her own thing. But then he tells his mom that he loves her and, oh, he knows what a pain in the ass Larissa can be. She's just so opinionated. Ugh. You can't play both sides, buddy. On this particular evening that we're talking about, Colt finds Debbie in the kitchen where she has been stewing, literally and figuratively, 4 weeks. Only then do we find out that Larissa and Deb haven't even spoken since the blow-up with John, which was a few weeks ago. Although homemade pizza sounds delicious, Colt just wants to talk about Larissa and how good and bad it's going. See what I mean? Stir in the pot, playing both sides. Colt wants to talk about his relationship with Larissa. I want to talk about the creepy-ass doll collection atop the slot machine. The things that this family collects absolutely baffles me. Did they collect furniture? No. A better shoe collection? Perhaps. They have a shoe tower, but doesn't seem to be full of a variety. Do they collect dolls and codependents? Oh, absolutely yes. Why can't we throw even a mini car collection in there? God only knows. Now later, Larissa drags Debbie to get her nails done. What a fun scene. Just a girl's day out, right? Well, if Larissa was truly trying to get close to Debbie, I don't think she would have brought her to get her nails done. She would have brought Debbie to something that Debbie likes to do. Perhaps a Victorian doll fair, a craft fair, or maybe a really popular Mahjong meetup or something. Because Debbie looks like she is in her personal hell. She's not far from it based on the looks of Candy Nails, because that place looked quite shady to me. I'm afraid to even look at the Yelp reviews because you know I have this whole phobia of nail salons and germs. I really question why it's called Candy Nails. I spied 3 giant lollipops on the wall, but 3 styrofoam circles does not a candy store make. I think we need some help on the branding. Maybe get Marcus Lemonis in there, throw a little money, they can work together. It's got potential. Now, shockingly, Larissa is not wearing any makeup. Let's take a moment here. This, I thought for sure, was going to be an indication of a real psychotic break. If a woman takes pride in spending 2 hours on her makeup to go out with, someone made this analogy and they were so spot on, Toby from The Office last week and his wife, Curly Sue, then she suddenly shows up in a nail salon with chainmail earrings and 2 tight pants and not a stitch of makeup. Debbie, you in danger, girl. Now, the nail artist deserves, I don't know whether it would be an Oscar for acting or a Nobel Peace Prize, maybe some sort of an accomplishment in family therapy. She pulled something incredible off there. I hope she got a really good tippy from Larissa. The woman worked miracles. I don't trust Larissa completely that she's all good with Debbie living with them, but I do think Debbie was sincere. I know a lot of people don't like Debbie, but I don't know if it is her age or her motherly kind of wisdom in that nail salon, but I like Debbie. Now let's go on to Jonathan and Fernanda. They slept in separate rooms last night. Oh, boo-hoo. That's because John had a drink with his friend 45 minutes. It's so stupid. That's it. Fernanda is pouting because she wants John to be with her at all times, every minute of the day, and if he's not, she's going to throw a temper tantrum for attention because she's a teenager. That's the long and short of it. That's the truth. She's acting how she should for a teenager. She can't help how dramatic she is because biologically, that's how teenagers act. I really do think that she's a sweet girl. I just think she's not at the same maturity level as John, where she's learned how to be content in her own company or with herself. Most of us who are adults and have been for a while, we savor those moments or days when you can just be alone, enjoy the presence of silence, of no one else. And I guess just to further this decree of mine, Fernanda has decided to pass John a note between passing periods. I mean, this is where we're at. Not only is she passing him this note, she's reading it aloud. This kind of defeats the purpose in writing a letter, but cool story, Fernanda. Let's hear it. So while she's reading this note, just, you know, oh, feelings, love, blah, 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 John is just staring like big James from season one, Love After Lockup, dramatically staring, no blinking at all, just staring into her face. That kind of shit freaks me out. I would run to the closest border, Canada, Mexico, the state line, doesn't matter. I would be out of there. I don't want anyone paying that much attention to me. I'm most comfortable when I'm only being like half listened to. It's just how I was raised. And it's how you're probably listening to me right now, right? You're doing your dishes. You're flicking off the asshole next to you in traffic. We're all on the same page. We all get it. Now, here's the deal. Fernanda says she's sorry for making a whole big deal about him being gone for 45 minutes. But she says she makes a big deal so that John won't do whatever he's doing ever again. So basically, they just want to have this fight and make up because they love the makeup part. I'm sure we can all agree that this is just the basic relationship cycle. They love it. It works for them. So have at it. I just don't want to see any more of it because I'm totally bored with these two. Now let's talk about Asuelu and Kalani. I know I've had some wine tonight. I'm refusing to do intermittent fasting over the holidays because what the hell's the point of living? But did I miss the part, maybe I was refilling my wine glass, where Kalani and Asuelu actually planned their wedding? I know we saw a dress shopping scene and her decision that she was going to marry him when they were eating their melted ice cream, but I didn't know it was like a done deal. They're doing it now. We see him roll up in this minivan. They're both barefoot. I had to do a double take because I thought maybe I accidentally changed to A&E Live PD or something because who the fuck does that? But turns out, no, they've planned a wedding in California, so they've driven down and they're just going to do the damn thing on a boat. They don't have any clothes, no concrete plans. And another awkward thing is that Kalani's mom is the only one that knows that she's pregnant again. So later when Kalani gets a pedicure with her mom and her sister, it's totally weird. She's keeping her pregnancy a secret from Kalani because she's afraid of how she's going to react. This is what I think the problem is. When you end up sharing every detail of your intimate relationship with your sibling or even a friend, if you ever change your mind or things get better, that person is still going to be left with the saltiness of not liking the person that you're with, and it's going to make it weird. And also, it's going to make it not only weird, but extremely awkward. And is there even a word for it when you are keeping a pregnancy with that person a secret? Let's just add all of that awkward bundle up and throw it together with a bunch of cliche blow-up penises at a bachelorette party. And it's the recipe for amazing TV. There are things that made me cringe, but that's why I watch this show. So right around the time that they're calling for shots, Kalani decides that she needs to drag Kalani away and spill the beans. It's hard for me to tell you, Kalani, I'm pregnant. I don't totally understand why Kalani is so sad and disappointed. This is where I want to jump into our Facebook group right now and see what you guys think, because I don't know if it's just my relationship with my family and friends. I get why she might be worried about her sister and what her future is going to be like, but I don't understand why she is mad about it. She is mad. She walks off, she's crying, and she starts saying that Asuelu, this is a quote, did it to tie her down. That's a bit much. I mean, Kalani is responsible for her pregnancy too. It should not be all on Asuelu. Plus, I think it just needs to be called out that I think Family Kalani is just too involved in Kalani and Asuelu's relationship. It makes me curious if they get as involved in the other siblings, the other children's relationships. I mean, we talk about Colt and his mom, but if you think about it, Kalani's family is just as involved in her life. Okay, Eric and Lita. 10 more days to the wedding and Eric is stressed. Oh, poor chap. In his words, he had to get Tasha out of the apartment to prove to Lita that she's his number one priority. Do you think Eric has taken a moment to reflect on whether he is Lita's number one priority? Now, material things aside, like Lita giving up her maids, her financial assistance from her parents, has Lita done anything to show that Eric is her number one? No. I'm not saying that I feel sorry for Eric at all. I just think it goes to show that Eric is so focused on himself. This is going to be gross, but bear with me. He's focused on himself and the pleasure he gets from Lita. I know, it's true though. He doesn't even really care that Lita doesn't seem to even really like him that much. He enjoys what he gets from her. It doesn't even have to be reciprocal. Now, Tasha and her sisters are meeting Eric to talk about things. Pretty mature of them to come together as sisters to confront their dad with their feelings and their concerns. The look on Jenica's face, though, the youngest daughter, when Eric walks up to the table, her face is just a story map of sadness. I'm getting choked up even thinking about it. Her eyes were watery. She was almost emotionless in a way. It was just absolutely heartbreaking to see. Does Eric notice that, though? No, of course not. He just yells at her, "Are you going to let me in?" And then I think she just tries to kind of deflect or not be as embarrassed. And she's like, and he goes back to her, what? I mean, his arrogance and cockiness is even beyond David and Annie at this point. And you know how much I hate them. I say it every week that he's worse than David, but I mean, he's exponentially worse than David to me. The way Eric walks in there and sits down, it's like he thinks that his kids owe him something. "They're a big part of my life, Finn. This is my wedding. I hope they see that I'll be alone if Lita leaves. I hope that they don't want that for me." Well, you know what? Fuck you, man. It's not your daughter's jobs or responsibilities to manage your feelings and your emotions. That is your responsibility to them. They are the children, and you are the parent. You will always be their parent. He continues, saying, spending the last 20 years of his life focusing on his kids, it's his time now. He needs to do what he wants to do. No. That is not a thing, Eric. You chose to have children. You are a parent now until the day you die. Your kids don't have an expiration date that you can just check out and say, oh, okay, it's time for me to do me, you do you. The only thing that Eric is right about is this being his last chance at love. Because after this little selfishness and lack of empathetic parenting plastered across the world, good luck finding a woman who will not want to punch you in the face at first sight. The real issue at this dinner is that Eric's daughters want to tell Eric how they feel and how they've been treated. Yet Eric is at the dinner to make sure that they come to his wedding. They have two completely different goals in mind. He doesn't care about how they feel. He just wants them to put it all aside for him because Eric's feelings are what's important. Come to my wedding, and it's probably, let's be honest, because he prepaid for another 3 meals and he knows that he can't get a refund. Jump over to Lita, who is dragging Alessandra around to her makeup trial appointment. She explains that she's going alone because all of her friends and family are in Indonesia. Sure, Jan. Sure, your friends and family. Well, the family part might be right, but the friends part? Doubtful. Now, what's interesting is that Alessandro suddenly disappears as Lita sits down to get her makeup done. And that's when I think we all understood Lita is that bitch. That entitled bitch who brings her kid to the salon and thinks everyone else thinks her kid's adorable. Everyone else is there to entertain and babysit your kid. No. And if this is you, if you're thinking, hey, I bring my kid to the salon, no one else minds. Guess what? We do. We're all there for the same reason that you are. We want to get away, have that hour or two to ourselves, feel pampered, enjoy the shampoo. It's the best part. We want to relax too. You're off talking, doing your own thing. So now we're stuck here talking with your little brat. I mean, Lita wouldn't know anything about that because she has her whole team of professional hair and makeup people back in Indonesia that always make her pretty. Clearly. I mean, she set her own damn self up for that one. Now the makeup artist, oh my God, how unlucky was she to have to paint Lita's face and now she's filling in as the best friend slash therapist. She gets stuck asking Lita about her relationship and it could not have been more awkward. If Clinique Lady could have run, she would have. If Lita could have chained her to the radiator, she would have. She thinks the makeup artist is now her new best friend. It's nice to be able to have someone to talk to. I don't have Eric's daughter, so it was nice. Delusional bitch. Now let's jump to this walk in nature with Eric, where Lita is all concerned about cleanliness. Let's remember, this is a woman who is adamant about and is choosing to sleep with Eric. So explain that one to me. I don't buy the germaphobe bullshit. It's just about control. That's it. End of story. Eric sits down and instructs her how to sit down at a picnic table. Okay. And he wants to have a civilized discussion about Tasha and her relationship with Lita, but I know for a fact it's purely for the camera because he flat out says to Lita, I don't blame you. Funny, he didn't say the same thing to his own daughter. And of course, Lita's first response is, so you're choosing me, right? I'm number one. Eric, of course, says yes. And then he says, well, Tasha may be at the wedding, but she keep her distance. She just be off in the background or something. All together now, fuck you, Eric. He is such a two-faced motherfucker. Telling your daughter that you want her to be there, it's so important for you, then telling Lita that Tasha wants to come, but you're going to make sure she keeps her distance and you'll just push her off into the background anyway. The guy makes me sick. If Lita didn't like the relationship that he had with his ex before, she's really not going to like it now because I have to imagine that things are really ugly. I mean, week after week, every time we see this, can you imagine being his daughters and his ex-wife? It's absolutely horrifying. Speaking of horrifying, Steven and Olga. This is another one where I can't wait to see what you thought about Steven. He did not come out smelling like a rose, in my opinion, even after his little revelation, his little surprise at the end. But first, can we talk about Olga and how beautiful she is? She was just naturally gorgeous from the inside out in that cream turtleneck and the striped pants. Who in the world, besides Heidi Klum and maybe Dorinda Medley, can pull off striped pants? It's Olga. I mean, I just adore her. She's meeting up with her friend Anna to talk about her concerns about Satan, sorry, not sorry, Steven, about leaving Russia with Richie. Where do I even begin with this get-together? I mean, first, Anna's apartment looked absolutely lovely, much more modern than Olga's. Immediately, my eyes went to the vegetables that they were chopping because never have I ever, 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 nor will I ever get together with my besties just to chop peppers and eat some greenery without dressing and drink room temperature water. This is also why I weigh a third grader more than I'd like to. But on the flip side, I really looked at this as an international moment, something all countries and all kin can celebrate. Two women having a strong bond, a strong friendship, building each other up, having each other's backs. I thought it was a great scene. It was very refreshing. I just love Olga and Anna's friendship. I kind of want to invite myself over for a cup of warm water, just hang with the girls. But let's get to the real dirt. Anna's kind of like a Russian Nancy Drew. She doesn't see any clues that Steven's dropping along the way to convince her that he has actually applied for Olga's visas. No papers, no interviews. Olga has not even signed any documents that she had to sign a review. Olga's just been trusting this whole time that Steven's been working on it, but now with Anna whispering in her ear, she's doubting it too. So later the two of them are on this walk alone and Steven says he has a secret he's been keeping from Olga. Now call me naive, I really didn't see this coming, truly did not. I mean, how do you lie to someone for months upon end? The woman who has been carrying your child, waiting for an answer from you every single day. On top of this massive life-altering lie that you are hiding, let's remember that Steven has been throwing around how insensitive Olga has been to him, how he's going to be taking his son to the U.S., but it's not a big deal and Olga's being selfish. I mean, care to ponder with me how Steven would have reacted if the tables were turned? I was not moved at all by that proposal. I don't think we should all be praising Steven for allowing Olga to keep Richie. Absolutely not. He was serious about taking Richie with him. And the proposal, it made me cringe, to be honest. I didn't have any warm and fuzzy feelings. And most of the time, I do get a little sappy with proposals. Not this one at all. Steven might have moments when he's nice to Olga, but he's also clearly abusive. We've seen it on film. That's not camera trickery. I guess that's all I have to say about that. I didn't buy this whole Steven turning into the good guy thing, and I really hope that you guys saw through that bullshit too. Now, previews for next week. Larissa locks herself in the bathroom. Eric and Lita and Asuelu and Kalani get married. Jay won't leave Ashley's house, and Steven puts Olga out of her misery by finally leaving the country. Now remember, next week I will not be here with a recap, but the week following I will be talking about the tell-all, which I believe is in 2 weeks, as well as any highlights from next week's episode. Please join me on Patreon. I will be dropping some bonus episodes a little bit later this week. I have a very exciting episode, one of my favorites from all year long. Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom, she joined me and we broke down one of the best episodes of the best show on TV, The Office's Benihana Christmas. There's another surprise in the works for a bonus episode dropping, not quite sure, but sometime in the next 2 weeks. Remember to subscribe, share, tell a friend, click that little 5 stars if you would. Talk to me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at RealityVPod. Check out my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks. Also, check out the new merchandise in the Reality TV podcast store, I guess you would call it. I will have a link in the show notes. I have Stay Salty donut stickers. I have some Salty Beach stickers. Get it? Salty Beach, Salty Bitch. I know. So punny. Just check it out. Cute mugs, water bottles. I have some Natalie on a Scooter. They See Me Rolling merchandise. Check it out. I also have some adorable mugs that are available on Zazzle. My good friend Anne designed them, and they are so cute. Check them out. That's it, you guys. Hope you have a wonderful holiday. See you next year. Stay salty.